there's so much to unpack with The Changeling on Apple TV Plus, and we give it a shot. Plus, we talk about what Welcome to Wrexham means coming back to TV for its second season.
An Alabama Tape Projection.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take, where we prompt conversations for thoughtful, busy TV devotees, all from us, your irreverent outsiders. I'm Blaine Donkin, I'm the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. I always could not help dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV, movies, and more. I have an English degree and a side hustle as an English teacher, so I'll try my best to offer insight that you can use for conversation with others, or even with us, or even just to think about. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on this podcast each week, as with me are the other hosts, Adam Morrow's an erudite traveling and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald is a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film, television, and more. And Natalie Morrow, she's the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and she's a huge Beyoncé fan. From us, you'll get the obvious, but you'll get the obscure. We are here for the TV and streaming obsessed who are just too busy for anything more than the show or movie itself. We'll give the outside of Hollywood analysis, and like a lot of the Alabama Tape productions, it'll come with zero Southern stereotype.
That's our AI portion.
Yeah, that wasn't really us. It might have looked like us. Clones.
We're just generating content.
Yeah. Oh, what a sad phrase that is. Hello, everyone. We're here. We're taking it down. You're here. You're with us. We're not clones. We're real. I don't want to go one step too far into this podcast without thanking our donors. We ran a week-long donor drive with the Alabama Take as a whole, but I don't know if we could call ourselves the flagship program, but we're kind of like one of the backbones of the Alabama Take. And anyway, the donation campaign ended last week, and I'll run through a quick thank you list of those who are not anonymous. We want to thank Mallory McCormack. She's host, by the way, of the Stare Down podcast. Justin Nelson, Mark Falk.
Aw.
Yeah, and he even sent a very sweet note with his. So thank you, Mark. Shaney Gentry Sincotti, which is an old friend of mine. Brian Oliu, featured writer sometimes for The Take. Krista Halbrook. Try to keep an eye on some of these lists so that I don't say anyone who's anonymous, just in case I want to keep it that way. Paige Coster, thank you very much. Samantha Simmons, one of the helpers, editors, writers for The Take. Gia Bates, Josh Hamilton, Todd Egger, I've mentioned him on the show. Drew Kello.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Drew.
Sweet Drew.
There we go. Ty Edmondson, one of the guest hosts quite often for this show, helped out. Michael Wood. So thank you all. There's several more who wish to remain anonymous. I will not break your anonymity. It's the only time we've ever done a donation drive, and I don't plan to again. Might have to in like 2 or 3 years, you know, if like our hosting costs go up due to inflation or something again crazy. But we don't want to do it yearly like that set of chumps over at NPR.
Yearly? I wish they'd do it yearly.
How often do they do it?
It's like every other week.
They got Bo Hicks in the studio every other week. Chilling for
talking about the driveway stories.
Begging for your nickels.
But yeah, at most, we do it every 2 or 3 years or something just to get donations. If you want to help, there's actually a little donation page. I don't think a lot of people know about it. You go to thealabamatake.com, and you can click on donations. You can click on shop, and we get a portion of anything bought from our online store. And that way, you can kind of get something for your money, and we get a little chunk of change from that, too. It's not a lot, but it helps. You can do that and make your heart grow 3 times its size.
Guys, I saw a t-shirt. You may have seen it because you live in a different part of the country than that. But I saw a t-shirt the other day that was the Trump mugshot, and it said, never surrender. But he is surrendering. That's why he got his mugshot taken.
It's literally surrendered.
What a great segue to our first segment, which is Lauren Boebert. We want to talk Mitt Romney's retiring. No.
I love the politics segment of this podcast.
The politics segment of this podcast lasts exactly 2 minutes.
I mean, it's like the most likable few stories about Mitt Romney, and Bobert, who thankfully I watch so little news that I always question, am I saying that name right? Because that sounds weird. Just blowing vape clouds and getting field skis in a crappy play, and then Romney eating gross salmon sandwiches and watching streaming alone.
He slathers salmon with ketchup and eats
horrible.
Like a sandwich.
That's like some Patrick Mahomes level buffoonery. But who's not just watching streaming alone while eating a sandwich? You know, that's pretty relatable.
Now, there's your America.
The people, Senator. Eating your disgusting shame sandwich.
I'll tell a quick tale out of school. I was texting with Adam and Donovan Friday night and yesterday. I was so unawares that the Lauren Boebert video surveillance footage existed. I'd only seen the G-rated from CNN where she's escorted out and just tugging at her dress to keep it above water. Adam sends me a link of the black and white footage of her and her gentleman friend just groping one another.
During the Beetlejuice musical, no less.
I think the truly shocking thing is how good closed-circuit television cameras are in theaters in Denver.
Donovan will have a lot more of this on his theater podcast this week.
CC in Denver.
You know, we will get started properly, a little more properly. Last week I gave a spoiler-free overview of The Changeling from Apple TV+. Run it down. It stars Lakeith Stanfield as a rare book salesman who's fallen for a librarian in Queens, New York named Emma. One thing leads to another. They become a pair. Things happen. That's all I will say. It's based on the book of the same name written by he's a really good author, great author, Victor Laval. And unless you want spoiled on the first maybe two or three, we'll see how far we get. All four are streaming now. We will get too deep at least.
One because I hate doing homework.
Anyway, look at the time steps that we offer you in the podcast description. If you're in Spotify, those are clickable. So are they in YouTube. And then skip ahead to our thoughts and comments on Welcome to Wrexham instead. Donovan, you and I commented on Victor Laval's book from this year. We did that last week. It's called Lone Women. But I wanted to bring it back up because I think this show is a good indication of a guest that I have. It's a style that he has. See, I've only read that book and I've only watched this show, so I'm sort of doing some mental leaps here. I don't think it's unfair to say these things. He's not a one-trick pony or anything, but it does seem like his writing involves some kind of twist a bit, and he's got a certain signature to him. He's the narrator of the opening of the show, by the way.
Yeah, it's a good question because I've read also Ballad of Black Tom by him.
Oh, really?
And but that one was sort of predicated on a twist because it's taking a famously awful H.P. Lovecraft story and rewriting it. So the whole thing is like the things are familiar and the characters are familiar, but you don't really know what's going to happen.
He strikes me as an author who writes books that are good. They're entertaining. They're easily read. They latch onto you. But he's also maybe an author whose writing works even better thematically on screen.
Mm.
You know, it has a more profound effect seeing it or watching actors act it out. With Lone Women, I had this thought reading it long before I knew he had written The Changeling or that I was going to watch it, that I thought this would be a pretty good maybe show or movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not having like a deep reverberation with me, but I'm just enjoying the hell out of it.
I'd watch that movie. He is kind of cinematic, isn't he?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I think if you put definitely that book, because it's set in Montana in 1918. Mm-hmm. And if you put that on the screen and you had the right actors in writing, I do think it has, its themes will get at you a bit more. Not to reveal anything about Lone Women. I won't do that because, honestly, there's a couple of surprises in there, or even early in the book.
Yeah, it's good just to read. Just read it.
It's good just to read.
Just read it. It's good.
I like the setting. It's a very original take on that setting.
I really like the setting. Montana. I felt like it was doing stuff that I've seen other shows attempt to do, but not really pull off, especially with yeah, I liked it.
What was the movie we watched? Very similar setting, you know, Montana, West, 1918. It's like after the West is kind of sort of ended, but there's still remnants of it.
You know the Power of the Dog, do you?
That was the one, yeah. Jane Champion.
Yep.
Oh, man, that was good. Anyway, let's get into The Changeling. We'll get some more thoughts. This one's been called by Vulture as an adult fairy tale. You like that assertion?
That makes sense to me.
I think it makes sense to me too. I'm always curious by like what, like, we mean different things when we call something a fairy tale sometime, but putting all that aside, I think it works.
If the author of the Vulture recap section had seen four episodes deep, I get how he or she came to that conclusion. It's a little more evident there. Worth noting, a changeling is a child believed to have been substituted by fairies. I had to look that up. A child substituted by fairies so that the parents maybe don't recognize it, but at the same time, it's not really a cute little thing. It's monstrous.
Yeah, it's basically like the magical version of a cuckoo bird, right? Like, they take your baby and they leave something else there.
Isn't that what they used to say about before they knew, like, autism was a thing? People would basically call their autistic children changelings.
That's intense.
After
really.
A couple of years, their kids would just change and be totally mm-hmm. different.
No, I didn't know that. I mean, I don't like that. Like, I think we should do that, but I like that information.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Oh, I like that. Let's go back to that, shall we?
Yeah, let's get that.
You little fucking changeling, get the fuck out of here.
I don't know that they would call them that to their face, but they would say, like, the fairies took my child and whatever.
It reminds me of a quick story I'll insert here that I had a student said the other day. I hate artistic people. And there were some students across the room that thought she said, I hate autistic people. They were like, whoa, hey.
Taking a stand.
Yeah.
Why does she hate artistic people?
Yeah, that's what I want. What does she have can't. Against the artists of the world?
She was asked to draw something and it was horrible.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't coming out very well. The Changeling, Apple TV Plus. There's this motif of returning to places and people, parenthood, motifs, I should say, journeys.
And like repetition too, right?
Yeah. Like, and then the repetition itself.
Like ripple.
Books and stories are telling a story over and over. Birth as magic. Hubris. Bit of hubris happening. And some of that points to maybe some of this is even kind of sort of about postpartum depression. Which Adam and Natalie can comment more on because episode two, you're going to have to stop me when I...
Which Adam and Natalie know all about. Take it away.
Like, what do you know that we don't know?
It might be my confusion on what happens in episode two versus three and four because I've been rushing through them. So y'all are going to have to say, no, don't say that. Or I'm not going to spoil it like openly for three and four, but y'all might have to remind me.
Yeah, they do. They do linger on that quite a bit in episode two, and she even takes the baby for a checkup, hoping that the doctor can say something's wrong. But when nothing is medically wrong, the doctor then asks, "How are you?" The episode opens with her being told, "You know, you're not sleeping. It's okay to take like a Benadryl and conk out for all." You know, they're clearly not well. The adjustment has not gone well.
I think it does a good job of doing that by keeping a mystery going. Like, that's real. That feeling and that look she has on her face, and even her walking down the street in episode two saying, baby, please shut up. Please go to... I mean, that's real. And I don't think you should feel guilty about, you know, doing that. Some passerby looks at her funny and she says, don't say anything to me here. Yeah. That's in episode two.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And the reality that the camera creates and that the story creates could be either supernatural in some way or just completely exhausted narration, if that makes sense. Like,
what do you mean? You're not talking about the snapshot someone's taking out on the street, are you?
No, I'm talking about the physical, the camera, the way the story is, the show is filmed and presented. Like, everything has a dreamlike quality to it. A lot of the focus is really tight, blurred edges. The lighting is usually pretty dramatic and intense. Mm-hmm. And it just feels either, to use the phrase again, dreamlike, or in that kind of heightened state of reality that comes if you haven't had a good night's sleep in who knows how long. So that when things start to happen, I mean, obviously it's easy for him to dismiss the text that you're talking about, the pictures that come to her as, you don't know how your phone works, you're tired, blah, blah, blah. And we know that that's not dreamlike. That's just like, it is dreamlike, it's nightmare-esque, but that is real. But other things that maybe she's observing could just be because she's exhausted, you know? It's waiting to drop the supernatural element. Natalie compared it a bit to True Detective season one, where it kind of toes that line of, is this or isn't it? You know, what's reality here? And what you have compared it to something else too, Nat.
Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
That's funny. I was thinking about Lovecraft Country too with this one.
The HBO show?
The HBO show, yeah. Which I never finished because it turned out to be bad.
It did. It did and got canceled. This one's better. If you want to know vague things about through episode four.
I would have said even through episode two, it's a good bit stronger. Although Lovecraft opened pretty strong, but
Lovecraft had a good couple episodes to start with, and then...
Yeah.
Anyone perceptive and note that Emma does not use an Apple phone on an Apple show, and that's telling?
Oh, I guess she doesn't, does she?
That's always telling on an
Apple
show.
Every time you see her smartphone, it's just like a smartphone. It's not an Apple, I mean.
I wondered about that. I mean, is it... But it's not a... green text, Nat, you'll have to weigh in here. It's not a actual phone, is it? It's like some fictionalized thing, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I assumed it was just like, you know, John Q phone.
Right.
Like an amalgamation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you watch any other Apple shows, which we do, we're fans. We talked about this last week, but everyone's got an Apple phone because, I mean, it's free, it's product placement, you know.
And they always look good.
And they look good. Yeah. I don't argue that. It feels substantial. I don't have a comment on this, but I just kept rolling it through my mind. Both Apollo and Emma had white fathers. And this is a story about parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just trying to piece that together mentally.
I always wondered if it seems like it took a while. And I remember talking on here before about the way that phones have been presented over time. And the inclusion of text messaging into TV shows and how it's done and how different shows at different times we said, oh, they do that really well. Like, just show it on the screen and show the character reacting, or, you know, how do you integrate this new technology? But I still think it's like a viable option for a writer or director to not want anything too grounding in our reality to take people out of the story, especially if it's intended to have kind of a fairy tale dreamlike quality to it. I mean, they're also not like going to Times Square or standing in front of the Empire State Building or showing the Statue of Liberty or something. Yet they're in, I mean, I know that people who live in Queens don't like hang out in Manhattan, but it's very, very generic in the way that it presents all these things.
Mm-hmm.
That is
so
true.
The phone fits to me.
The first episode, the only time I was like, oh, it's New York, is like when they get out of the restaurant and it's crowded. Other than that, and then of course they do this, go on the subway, right? But
right.
Other than that, it's like,
the subway,
you know,
is
it's completely
the biggest
nondescript. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's completely not, it could be anywhere.
She gives birth to the baby at the end of episode one.
On the subway, right?
I agree with that.
No, yeah, I should have put that more in the form of a question, but yeah, I was asking. I was making sure that's what I was talking about was the end of episode one. I think that too. A lot of these plot points feel purposeful, especially I tend to think that if it comes from a book, I think okay, so that's in there, and they chose to leave it in there for the movie or the television show, so it's got to be a reason, or they've got a certain feel for the text, and they kind of want it to maintain that feeling. So the baby being born underground, I thought, oh, okay, that's a nice little touch if this is kind of going changeling style anyway. Or for changeling fairy tale. Yeah. Very cool. Interesting and crazy. I'll touch on something because it's in my notes later in my notes, and I'm bringing it back around. There's just a realness to that representation of both mother and father's level of specificity of tired. It's different for both of them, but it's there. The mother can be, I mean, that is such a great display of feeling crazy. I can remember Kelly telling me with our daughter, I feel crazy that I haven't slept, or I'm so tired that I feel mentally insane. It's just a great way for Laval to, it's a good device for him to tell this particular story, I think. And the father, if he's a champion and helping out like Keith Stanfield's character Apollo is, there's some tired there too. And you feel really weird. I wrote a piece on the Alabama Take about when my daughter was first born. I was also wrapping up Twin Peaks, The Return.
Yeah, I remember that piece.
It worked perfectly, but at the same time, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Because I was walking around in a dream quality anyway. This show, The Changeling, is kind of giving anyone who wants to experience that just a little taste of what that could be or what it feels like. What did you think about his father? This is Apollo getting back into the show. What do you think about Apollo's father coming to him in a dream quite often, maybe as a kid, in that blue, very scary mask?
I just got to see more, right? Because it's at least for me, I haven't gotten any big theme of that besides the one, like, you know, like his dad, Apollo's dad wants to be a great dad. Apollo wants to be a great dad. Apollo's dad disappeared. Apollo's still here, but has the weird dream and is maybe taken somewhere as a child by his father. But I just want to see. I'm sure it'll get connected with everything else. I just want to see. I'm not smart enough to figure out what's going on with it.
Well, may delve into in episode 2, which I'm sure we're going to get into this a little bit, the reliability of childhood memory.
I love it. What do you think? Let's get into episode 2. I'm open to some anything you want to say about episode 2 specifically.
Well, just the way that one of her childhood memories, a core foundational memory, is clarified by her sister, and you know, who I guess you could count as like the reliable narrator for her, where he doesn't have that to help untangle, you know, what the dad dream or whatever the stuff. You know, you said things repeat a lot, and I keep thinking they're just on these, and not to go True Detective, but they're on these circles of time that just keep on spinning and spinning and spinning, and the whole thing kind of becomes hypnotic from episode to episode of trying to figure out what's real and what was, I don't know. It's definitely in a heightened reality of, I think they showed us that for a reason. And you've seen more episodes than me, obviously, but when you asked Donovan that, I couldn't help but think of her and the fire memory.
It really makes me wonder about that opening scene of the boat, the ship from Europe.
Norway.
Norway. Thank you. I was going to say Denmark, Norway. Like, how would that be part of the circle, one of the circles we're seeing? Very interested to see. I think the runtime of, I'll take episode 3, for example, since I'm only talking runtime. I think it was 50 minutes, maybe somewhere between 50 and 55 credits can reduce that. It flies by. I seriously I didn't pick up my phone except to make some notes. But I'll compare that to Ahsoka, which was 35 or 40 minutes in its one of its recent episodes, and it dragged. I kept thinking, is it almost over? When it came to Ahsoka. When it came to The Changeling, I thought, that's it? So I'm having a fun time watching this show.
I'll say the first two episodes for me were not difficult watches, but I felt the full weight of the time, for sure. I don't know that it's like I think it's good and it's holding up to analysis really well, but I'm not sure that it's like an enjoyable watch for me.
Oh, you don't enjoy the bit of, I don't want to say mental challenge, the bit of mental stimulation it gives you to keep up with some of the timelines and things?
No, just spoon feed it to me. No, I think what you said about...
I love it.
About hubris is what can get me sometimes with these shows. And it's, I wish Natalie would jump in here. She's just letting all this fly by.
Especially with what you thought about the run times and if you're enjoying it.
When we took the dogs on a walk immediately after watching the second episode this week, and kind of I said something about hubris, that, you know, it's hard to, these characters have a certain amount of arrogance to the way that they approached life. And I think a lot of that was understandably based on wanting to create a reality that goes against their own upbringing, right? And that the belief that they could do better, Paula wanting to be a great dad, a mom wanting to appear as if she's got things figured out, Apollo doing the thing like cutting her the bracelet before time and saying, well, especially he invokes the speech that he's given a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Calling himself a god even, and messing with the spiritual thing when...
Without, you know, even her showed, consent, by the way.
Without her consent, yeah.
I that struck me.
So it can be almost hard to root. They're not on like a hero's journey. You know what I mean? There's... Mm-hmm. They have placed themselves in harm's way in a lot of respects. Even with the bracelet, it was without her consent, but she was told not to go to the waterfall. You know, she still went and still engaged, so I don't know.
Were you to put another actor in here, but other than Lakeith Stanfield, you might be treading some tough ground to want to pull for the characters at all.
Totally. And, you know, I think that he's just so likable for me that even, like, especially the thing Adam pointed out where he, like, the arrogance of being like, I am the god Apollo, and then doing something based on, I mean, it's like, it's arrogant. It's also, you can tell there's a little bit of like a little kid, you know, like trying to make himself feel better. But like, just, you know, the fact that like, I'm just like, I want to see what happens to this guy is how much I just absolutely love Lakeith Stanfield. He just disappears into a role.
Here are my thoughts on this show. A lot of times I watch horror things and I think, I sure would like for this to have just been a book so I can read it and be done with it. I sure am glad this one's a book. I'm just going to read it. I don't want to wait.
I've got great news for you.
I know.
It's a book. It's probably a pretty good one.
It got good reviews.
It does it?
It got really good reviews when it came out.
There's a couple of things I would say, but I'd be getting into episode 3. I will say that episode 4, I think it finally shows a few of the show's faults. Every show's going to probably have a few. Episode 4 might give it one or two mini threads than it needs. And I get that they're using an adaptation. And sure, if it's in the book, that's wonderful. But I think as a showrunner or a writer, you can say that's a little too much for the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can stuff a lot more in a book than you can in a movie or TV show. Just, I think it's just the nature of it.
I agree. And I think episode 4 might do that a little. Now, if it plays out, then, I mean, kudos. Then it's going to be great. I'm just really enjoying it. Cannot say too many bad things about it, other than it might have a thread or two too much come episode 4. Natalie, what do you think, though, as... Just going back to what Adam said, runtime, enjoyment, quality.
I mean, it's fine. I just don't enjoy these kinds of... Like, I like... It really just goes back to, like, I'm not interested in watching horror. I like the story. If the stories are good, I like the stories, which is why I'll read it in a book. But, like, it takes a lot for something, like, in this genre to really capture my attention. And this one, I'm 50% on it. I'm not giving up yet, but if episode 3 doesn't really sink its hooks in, then I may be done with it.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask if it was the horror or if it was just enough magical realism to assuage you.
Well, that's what I think. It doesn't feel like horror. That's what episode 3 needs to do for me, is give me more of that. And if it doesn't, then I don't like to sit and be stressed. Why would anybody enjoy that? You guys are crazy if you enjoy that.
That's a good question, and I do not have an answer to. I'm going to get with my therapist this week, and we'll come back.
Yeah, cook something up for us.
It's cathartic.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I will say that I'm excited to hear from you, maybe via text, maybe next week's episode, after you see who's in episode 3. I have a feeling some of y'all might recognize him.
Is it Tim Allen?
It's Lauren Boebert.
He's almost unrecognizable at this state in his career.
The Changeling, so.
I was surprised at how many opinions I had once we got rolling.
Yeah, it's pretty packed. It's a show that's got some things happening. We'll have to wait till the end to see if it had something to say fully as a show. There it is, The Changeling. We'll take a quick little break, and on the other side, we're going to talk just a little of Welcome to Wrexham. Very intricately described as three buttholes talking about Star Wars. The best thing about the podcast We Are Star Wars is that Corey, and Jim, that's right, two Coreys, are self-aware. But not only that, they know their shit. We Are a Star Wars gives you plenty to think about as they break down the newest and the oldest in Star Wars canon, which is growing by the minute. Produced by the Alabama Take, We Are a Star Wars appears sporadically as the three buttholes gather themselves when they can, so be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Find any episode on thealabamatake.com as well. That's We Are a Star Wars. We're back. Thanks to you all. Welcome to Wrexham, back on telly. Did I do that right?
You did it right.
Okay.
On the telly. But
this isn't related to any, and it's Adam's story, not mine. It's not really related to Wrexham, but whenever I think of Wales now, I think of this past year, Adam, when you were in Wales and you had like that red ale or whatever, and it was like something unpronounceable. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but my memory of the story is you asked the person at the bar, like, how do I pronounce it? Like, how do I as an American pronounce this? And she was like, don't ask me, I'm Polish.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
That's all I can think of with Wales now.
I was ready. She hadn't said a word yet. She just like looked at me at this busy bar and smiled as if like, go ahead and order.
Yeah, yeah.
Wanted to order whatever the local stuff was. And she said, I have no idea. So
it's so funny.
We both just worked on the pointing.
Thoughts on Wales as a country?
Oh, it's got a cool flag, doesn't it?
Oh, it's got an amazing flag. Dragons. Wales is very cool. I'm very pro Wales.
Is there a distinct difference when you get into Wales versus being in any other part of the UK?
Yes, and that's a loaded question. Yes. So the answer is yes, to start with.
I guess you can be very kind and just say geographically. Like when you're in the south geographically, you can pinpoint a couple of things. Or if you're in the west, obviously the Rocky Mountains. Is there?
Yeah, for sure. But there's enough variation region to region. Yeah, it all looks different. But yeah, I mean, there's Welsh on all of the signs. Like it's a rule that street sign, road sign, directions, even simple things like the directions in a hotel about what to do in case of a fire are also written in Welsh, and they just look crazy.
No word should have that many Y's.
Right.
Which is why you got burned.
Yeah.
In that fire.
While in Wales.
Yeah. Yeah. Just rolled.
Adam burned up.
Stop dropping what? No, but they're very, we played in a place that it's not a big city, and they were having like a festival kind of thing with a stage inside this, like an Egan's kind of bar, not in same physically, but kind of like the anchor of the community and the music scene, and it was very good vibes. There were like families outside and inside some too. One would play on the inside stage. It was a lot bigger than Egan's, but play on that stage. And then one would play outside and people would just flip back and forth between the two. It was great. The establishment next door had one of the giant flags that Donovan was talking about. And it said something like, never forget who you are, or something along those lines. It's like Welsh pride is pretty intense, and I'll say all the bands in that scene were very, very, very good. I feel like sometimes in touring across America, regionalism gets lost, and like being very proud of the little scene that you're in because people are always kind of one eye on the interstate, and these people were living it. It was cool. We were a long way from Wrexham, but I got the Welsh experience.
Lots of songs about Super Paul Mullen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exclusively.
Now, when you went with Natalie, the most recent trip, did y'all go to Wales?
We did not.
Okay. I was including her on my last question, but That's because I got the two trips confused.
Didn't make it all the way over there. She really wants to go to Cardiff.
Yeah.
I do want to go to Cardiff.
Why is that, Matt?
Is there a reason why? Yeah.
That's where they film all the Doctor Who.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or they used to. I don't know if they still do or not.
Why? Do you know why? Is it just a...
I don't know.
Just a vibe?
Tax breaks.
I'm going to clear the pitch and let Adam run with the ball. What do you do in soccer? Dribble the ball? I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't run with it. You can't pick it up and run with it.
You're running with the ball.
Okay.
That's your feet.
I like to think you're running after the ball.
Yeah, sometimes. Let's clear the pitch and let Adam run with the ball. Wax poetic about Welcome to Wrexham.
I mean, I love these shows so much about sports. Sports are fun. I thought this show at moments, there was one episode in particular last season that was just so good about like what sports means to a community and what it can mean to, you know, it's like a tie through history. I mean, for Alabama football, for us, I'm sure, well, not Donovan or Nat, but Blaine, I'm sure you had family, you know, several generations back who would have opinions about Alabama football. And even though maybe they're gone, you're still in some way part of this long-standing spectrum of people who care about this same team. And that's a fun link. A tapestry. You're part of a tapestry. So I think that stuff is super cool. And the moments where they leaned into that were fantastic. And that was even true in this first episode with the terraces, them tearing that down. I thought that was one of the stronger moments, was having people reminisce about what those meant, the memories that they had, the pub owner talking about sneaking into his first game as a kid and just being hooked for life. And
Wayne Jones, star of the show.
Yeah. I also love that the show has become a bit meta, as it had to by default. It's not clever. It's just like, if you put real people in real places that you can go visit on very famous television shows, they're probably going to get interrupted when they're filming, you know.
But and he's so kind about it, right? Well, he's on camera, but he's very nice. He's like, hey, we're filming. Yeah, it's one. Yep, yeah, we're filming. Okay.
You got to think that they're enjoying their newfound celebrity.
And it makes you wonder, it's kind of like the Saban effect. How many years is it going to take before they hate it? You know, with Tuscaloosa, we found that it drew in a certain atmosphere and crowd at times, the more success that the team had.
Although, I mean, what they want is to go, I don't know that there's a like-for-like comparison there. What they want is to climb higher and higher, but, you know, I mean, there are people traveling from all over to see the games, but I'm not sure how much their daily lives would be impact. Maybe. I mean, they're all like, they stand to make a lot of money, at least everybody on the show, from the team doing well. So
do they get to a point where they just hate Rob and Ryan for doing that, you know, for they hate their success almost, but that's to be determined.
The only way, and they set up a way that they could hate them, is that you have to invest so much that if it doesn't work, it's hard to recover from. Like, it has to work. They laid those stakes out. Those are the stakes of season two.
They're very clear.
Yeah.
I might be jumping ahead here on what you guys want to comment on, but what a sad gut punch of an ending. The loss of the match paired with not getting funding for the cop, the tears, and those stands behind the goal. That's just doubling down on sadness, because when they lose the match, I thought, oh, okay, that's the end of the episode. But then you get one or two more scenes of them on their Zoom meeting, hearing from one of their managers telling them, no, we did not get the funding despite meeting Charles III, King Charles III.
Which was very surreal to see.
It was weird. Right? It was,
especially when he made an Always Sunny reference.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to bring it up.
We paused it and said, has his life become so numb? You know, he's so famous and so everything's going well. Did he like zoom back and think, me and my degenerate friends made this thing for like barely any budget that just came out of the King of England's mouth? Or is he just like so used to surrealness in his life that? Because I found it so strange.
I bet he reflected on it. I'm sure when you're in the moment, you're just in the moment within that kind of situation because you're just like, well, like, don't say the wrong thing. Don't piss yourself.
After Adam had his surgery on Monday.
This is a real.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last week.
Yeah, let's hear it.
You know, I drove him. We were waiting on his medicine to get done at the, what do you want to say? It did.
Well, just
full anesthesia.
He was all the way under. Surgery turned out to be more of a to-do. I was not completely out. Breathing tube, everything. I'm fine, everyone. Don't worry.
But we're waiting on his medicine, and he says he's hungry, and he wants a breakfast burrito. So we go get him a breakfast burrito, sitting in the front seat of my car, and I watched him very carefully and meticulously unwrap the foil around this burrito. Finally gets it all like padded down around the burrito. And then he stops and he turns and looks at me and he just says, egg. And he was shocked. I did not understand that he was referencing It's Always Sunny in that moment.
But here's why. Because in this group text, you were complaining about the challenge. Times we went over this going from Sunday to Thursday or Sunday and Thursday to this Thursday, and yeah. I think I sent you that gif of Frank holding up, may I offer you an egg in this distressing time?
Exactly.
All you and that's said a limo driver egg.
But it's because they make that Patty's commercial, remember, and they just go to Frank and he's just holding an egg and he just goes egg. And there's no context there either. I'm not defending the fact that I had context. I'm just saying there was a reference point.
I will step in and defend Adam in two ways because I've been there. One, when you're just coming out of that anesthesia fog, even for the rest of the day, you think things that you think other people are thinking. It's very much like a lot of other drugs. And the second thing is, everything is in slow motion. So him spreading out the thing. I have done that, coming out of anesthesia and just like preparing my cereal very slowly. It's like, I better get this right.
Anyways, the King of England would understand that reference.
The King of England popped up and said, egg in England.
Yeah. Welcome to Wrexham. I had King Charles III, the most recent king here, making a... It's Always Sunny. It's Always Sunny there. Isn't that his question?
Yeah.
I think we're all pretty glad it's back on TV. Adam, you might know where the season's going, kind of. Don't you know?
Yeah, some of the for sure.
Facts of the, I don't. I chose not to. Donovan, where are you?
I also mostly choose not to. Like, the most I know about Wrexham is they had a lot of fun getting whipped by Man U and Chelsea this summer in the United States.
Which is after this season.
So I have some guesses. But like,
that might not even be included in the show.
I would be surprised because that was in preseason for the season that's currently happening. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the least interesting part of the show to me is, and it's still fun most of the time, is the two famous dudes being famous. You know, 100% so
I agree with that.
Them doing like the it's ironic that I can't even think of it. The woman's training them to meet the king. What do you call that? Etiquette training. I was kind of like, okay, this is enough of that. But the real point with the two of them is, and they kind of address it in show, is that they are two pretty famous and very famous actors with, you would think, pretty large bank accounts, asking the UK government to bankroll their project. Which I know that's like how things work. I know in America we're pretty sick of billionaires using public taxpayer money to build new stadiums every 20 years. And it's not apples to apples because this is improvements on an actual
historic landmark.
Yeah, it's a landmark and they're not building something new. It was decrepit and needed to be they're doing it the best way possible, but it was still like, you know, as the setback for the episode, I didn't really care. At all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trying to create a balance between how much of the audience is tuning in for Ryan and Rob and how much of the audience is tuning in for the wrecks and people they've come to know and maybe love. And there's a, it can be a jarring juxtaposition between those two elements. And I think that, I think the show honestly could lean into that maybe and even find a clearer voice, because I do think that it sometimes lacks an exact style or voice because of those things. You know, last year they had even this weird episode that wasn't at all learning Welsh customs, and
that didn't do a lot for me.
Yeah, that was the worst episode for sure.
Right,
it just felt like filler.
It did. It made it an episode too long. Mm-hmm. Maybe season two they can find. Here's what we are. Here's what we want to say with this documenting process. So we'll end there. TheAlabamaTake.com. You can find all kinds of things. Taking It Down Pod is, we're now kind of in more places. We're on TikTok, Taking It Down Pod, and we're on Blue Sky, Taking It Down Pod. We'll keep it all the same. I don't like that handle, but that's what we are on Threads and Instagram as well. So we'll just keep it as uniform as possible. Honestly, just trying to move away from Twitter. I'm not going to say my experience has been totally bad, but it's just so weird now. It's just, every time I post something, I get some sort of weird reply from a bot or a person who wants to argue or you name it. Anyway, we're trying to wean away from there. Go find us and the Alabama Take, our production team and website host, wherever you want. Final thoughts, Donovan?
Let's go Wrexham.
I think we can agree. Let's go Wrexham. Goodbye, everyone.